Cameron Crowe is with us right now. And Cameron, for the last hour and a half of the show, I've been telling people that out of my entire probably, oh my God, 40-year career, there's no one I've wanted to spend time with more than you. And we have 7 minutes, and I'd like 3 hours, please.
Same here, Lisa. What a pleasure.
I have to tell you, I didn't get the book in advance. This morning, I was listening to the audio book. I was, you know, going through bits and pieces as much as I could. And I still am amazed. And I told the audience, I still read Rolling Stone today because I'm just a few years younger. But this is what I always wanted to do. And you somehow made it happen at age 17 when you ended up in the Eagles dressing room and did it without anxiety and this cool, calm demeanor. Yet this new book you named Uncool, which even the New York Times says is a joke.
Well, you know, when you try and be cool, you're never cool. So I've always felt like I didn't quite belong. So if I was quiet and loved music and listened to the musicians that I wanted to ask questions of, then I might sneak in a little bit of cool. But mostly I just felt so privileged to be able to ask questions of my heroes and spend some time on the road with them, like Led Zeppelin, where we were hubbing out of Chicago at the Ritz-Carlton. So I have like deep, amazing memories of how great music is and feels and sounds in Chicago. And I'm just so glad we're coming back for a little bit.
Yeah, Saturday night, another stop on the book tour at the Athenaeum Theater. John Cusack is going to be the person on stage interviewing you. I mean, we saw you with Questlove. You're going to be on stage with Sheryl Crow, Kate Hudson, Eddie Vedder. But we read the People magazine interview, so you credit John Cusack with teaching you something. Tell everybody what that is.
You know, Lisa, when I first started becoming a director, I was surrounded with some people that were, you know, nervous about how I was going to do. And I remember the first day John Cusack did a scene, and immediately they started surrounding me at the monitor and whispering in my ear. And I looked up, and John Cusack, who, by the way, is an enormous music fan, and we always had that to like vibe on together. He looked at me and he kind of crooked a finger and said, hey, come over here. And I went over to him and he said, look, Cameron, you know, I've worked with some pretty great directors and here's what I know. An actor is there to throw down for you and I'm going to throw down for you making this movie. So when I finish the scene and I look up, I want to be able to look in your eyes, you and me, because it's you and me out here and nobody whispering, you know, in your ear. It's between you and me. And I was like, that is a lesson I will learn for all time. And I've done it ever since. And it really was John Cusack's brilliance in knowing that a movie is great when the actor and the director are completely in sync. So that, for many other reasons, makes me love Johnny Q, as we used to call him.
Yeah, I'm so excited you're going to be in Chicago on Saturday night. There is, I know this book from what I gathered, and every little clip I listened to today is really a tribute to your family. And people may or may not know that you lost your sister to suicide. You were 10 years old. Is she the person that you identify as cool?
Exactly. It's really beautiful that you say that. I was 10 when we lost her, but what she did for me when I was 9, I remember, was she came to me and said, I know you got a crush on one of these little girls you go to school with, and I just want to tell you how you can impress her. Play her this record. And she gave me a record by a group called the Tremolos that was called Silence is Golden. And she also loved the Beach Boys, you know, and she said, offer her this record and tell her it's like the sound of how I feel about you. And I did. And of course, her boyfriend thought it was cute. And I was a little mascot to both of them. But I never forgot the power of music and music that could be, you know, beautiful, pop, deep, romantic, all kinds of stuff that it sometimes said things that you couldn't say yourself. And that's the beauty of music. And I still feel that the right song on the right day can just guide your life in incredible ways.
I got to tell you, I came away thinking that your mom was the cool one. I mean, yeah, I got that the book was, you know, a tribute to your sister, but I thought, who takes their little kid to see Bob Dylan to sit on a gymnasium floor at $1.50 a ticket and introduce him to Dylan in the 60s? And yeah. I have to ask you this question because this is what I took away from that. 21 years later, he's, I guess, in the living room of your apartment and you're interviewing him. And you were asking about the 60s. And Dylan said, about the 60s. It was like the 20s. Nobody figured it out until the late 60s that something had happened. You were there, but you didn't see it. Only a few people saw it. I feel like we're living that moment again, Cameron. Do you?
I do. I really, really do. And, you know, leave it to Bob Dylan to say it so correctly. It's a feeling, and it's a miracle when music touches you, and it lives forever. And, you know, to have heard that from Bob Dylan sitting in my house was pretty amazing. I must say, it wasn't like he needed to come over and hang at my house. It was just convenient on the way from his house to where he was headed. So he came over and he did the interview there. But yeah, this is like kind of the miracle that happened from taking a big ride, doing what made me so happy, which was writing about the music that I cared about so much. And that guides your lives too.
Here's the difference between you and I is I know that Kris Kristofferson back in the day was a big get for you. I stood outside of his bus door at a county fair ready to interview him when I was 20 years old. He opened the door and I started crying.
I love that. When I was doing the audiobook for The Uncool, I got so emotional in a couple parts and I had to stop because I was kind of teary-eyed. It's amazing how much, you know, some of these memories can mean to you, and somebody like Kris Kristofferson or Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin, you know, they take the time and really they want to answer a young person's questions about why the music was the way it was or how it felt to them. And it's just a joy. I still love doing interviews.
So you identify Joni Mitchell as, I guess, your favorite interview ever. But who would be the favorite interview of Cameron Crowe at age 25?
Wow. At age 25, probably Pete Townsend of The Who. He, Lisa, this is a guy who, like, does an interview with as much passion as he plays with the band. It's like it's a guy who feels things so much, and there's an explosion inside of him when he plays, and also when he tries to explain, you know, his own passion. I always felt like he was one of the best interviews too, and I love that music to this very moment.
Well, he loves you. I mean, he's as much as said so. So is that transformed into a lifelong friendship? Did it?
Yeah, I just saw The Who in Las Vegas the other day, which I thought was their last show, but they had one more show after. And, you know, it was a warm and kind of wistful show, but it was still pure Who. And that's music played for music's sake. And I don't know, I get lost in the passion when you hear a band that feels things that deeply. The best.
Yeah, it's what all people who love music and are attached to it feel. And I saw the interview with Questlove on the book tour and talking about record stores. And my gosh, that's how we grew up, right? We didn't grow up with cell phones. We grew up with liner notes. And I remember standing in record stores, and you were that kid that was sober and never got high and resisted all the drugs you were offered when you were on tour with these rock stars. But do you remember record stores? You'd spend hours in there, and there'd be a whole wall of paraphernalia for a substance to that you could use to smoke. It wasn't legal.
Right.
It wasn't legal, but it was right under our parents' noses, and they did not know it even existed.
It was so not legal. But, you know, you had to be 18 to go into some of these record stores because they had, like, paraphernalia like that. I was interested when Questlove was talking, he was talking about the way incense smelled, you know, at a record store then. And also, you know, like that weed was much cheaper then and smelled like, like it. So, I mean, that's all part of the experience, I guess. But, you know, the thing is, Questlove is one of those guys that lives and breathes music. And, you know, so is John Cusack. This is a guy who we immediately kind of hit it off because he loved The Clash and he loved Public Enemy. And this is a guy, he's one of the few guys, I think, and he's played a musician. He played Brian Wilson.
Right.
And this is one of the few guys that I think is credible as a musician, a real music type, and an actor. And there's so few that really can do both. Mostly they live in different camps, you know. And it doesn't often work when an actor tries to play a musician, but it works with Cusack. I can't wait to talk about music with him again. We used to go around and around and around talking about it.
Oh, it's going to be so great. It's Saturday night at the Anthoneum Theater here in Chicago. The book is Uncool. The author is the voice that you're hearing on this radio station right now, the one and only Cameron Crowe. So great to talk to you.
You too, Lisa. So fun to be on WGN. Come on.
That's right. You know the station.
Come on. Of course I do. It's a real thrill.
We'll see you Saturday night.
We'll see you, Lisa. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.